fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
I'm a little boy with glasses, the one they call a geek. A little girl who never smiles, cause I got braces on my teeth. And I know how it feels to cry myself to sleep. Don't laugh at me, don't call me names. Don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all the same. Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me.
This song by Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary has become an anthem against bullying, an ancient behavior which has a sick new incarnation, cyberbullying. The use of the internet and social media to intimidate, humiliate, threaten, and harass innocent victims. It's an all too common practice, which is increasingly being viewed by political and law enforcement leaders as a crime. I'm Glenn Moberg. Up next on Route 51, we are looking at cyberbullying in terms of two upcoming events sponsored by the Marshfield Clinic. There's a behavioral health community conference on the subject that takes place on April 24th at the Laird Center, and an event on June 21st called Mike's Run, named in honor of Mike Hackman, who committed suicide in 2010 after a long battle with mental illness. Our guest today, Mike Field, an advanced practice nurse with the Marshfield Clinic Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Department, and Al Nystrom. He's the president of BMO Harris Bank of Marshfield and also a childhood friend of Mike Hackman's, who was instrumental in creating the fundraising event that bears his name. Now, later this hour, we'll also hear from Justin Patchen, a professor of criminal justice at UW-Eau Claire, the co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center, the keynote speaker at this upcoming conference, and also the author of Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying and Make Kindness Go Viral. As always, we want to hear from you. Maybe you know somebody who's been bullied. Maybe you were bullied yourself. Maybe you've got an opinion on the use of the internet and social media and how it can be a negative as well as a positive. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or as perhaps is appropriate for this particular program, you can place a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air and get our guests to respond. Mike Field, the Marshfield Clinic, has scheduled this behavioral health community conference on cyberbullying. It does take place April 24th at the Laird Center. What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, what we're trying to do is get the word out there about cyberbullying being a real and prevalent and growing area of concern with the basically the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, the event takes place at 6:30 p.m. There's no cost to attend. Registration, pre-registration is required, and seating is limited in the, is it the Frelke Auditorium? Am I pronouncing that right?
That's correct.
So if you want to register, you have to call this number. It's 715-387-9081. 387-9081. And the deadline is a week from today, April 10th. And if you need directions, you can go to marshfieldclinic.org. And the way to do that is you select locations, you type in Marshfield, and select Marshfield Center. So again, this is coming up April 24th at the Laird Center. Why is cyberbullying such an important topic, Mike? Why are we even doing this?
Well, as you explained earlier, cyberbullying is takes place using electronic technology, and as we all know, electronic technology is growing. Bullying used to be, you know, the situation in the at recess. It used to be face to face. What we're finding now is, you know, cyberbullying is occurring through the means of text messaging, emails, rumors sent by emails, posted on social networking, and it's having a significant effect on our kids and in the communities.
Mm-hmm. Now, the guest speaker for this conference is Justin Patch, and we'll be hearing from him in a bit. He's a professor of criminal justice at UW-Eau Claire, the co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center, and his presentation is titled Bullying Beyond the Schoolyard, which, you know, I guess is what you were just saying. This is something that can follow you all around. It's not related to just activity that goes on in a schoolyard anymore.
That's correct. You know, with the explosion of social media sites, I do want to say that, you know, cell phones and computers really are themselves are not to blame for cyberbullying. You know, the social media sites can be used for social activities, positive activities. We you know, connecting kids, family, friends, helping students with school and for entertainment, but those tools also can be used to hurt people. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're really focusing on is that, you know, the effects of cyberbullying and how it's affecting our children.
Now, Patchen has written four books on the topic with his partner, Samir Hinduja, and he's the co-director of this Cyberbullying Research Center. The new book is called Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral. And this book is specifically written not for adults but for young people. Why would that be important?
Well, what we've found was that in the research was that with bullying when they were younger was much more prevalent. Now with kids, as they grow older, they now have the access to the social media. And so we're seeing much more of the cyberbullying going on in high school, mm-hmm. actually a growing prevalence in high school because they do have access to the computers and to the phones.
And you're an advanced practice nurse. You're with the Marshfield Clinic with their psychiatry and behavioral health department. How often do you run into this in your practice?
Well, I treat mainly adults, so I'm not. It's not as prevalent as an adult, but I do have three kids of my own, so I do hear about it. I do see it. I do have individuals in the community that talk to me about it, and I think the important thing to know is that it, you know, how it affects our children. Mm-hmm. You know, basically is that we do know that kids are being cyberbullied, are using alcohol and drugs, are skipping school, are experiencing in-person bullying, are unwilling to attend school, having lower self-esteem and having health problems. And I think that's where the focus and how it comes to me is that kids that are affected grow up to be adults. And the
right.
situation does reach into adulthood. So we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg now with cyberbullying, and I think we're going to see the effects of it as adults.
Yeah, you've got three kids. How old are they?
Two college and one just about going to college.
All right. So the ones who are off in college are probably kind of outside of your immediate sphere of influence, I would imagine. But yes. When they were younger and the one who's still living at home, how do you keep track of what they do on the Internet?
You know, I think it's important that what we try to do as parents is talk to your child, make sure that you're having discussion about what they're you know, what they're looking at. You know, address the idea of being a victim to cyberbullying. Develop rules. You don't want to take away this growing electronic age, but you do want to set limits. You want to sit and you want to explore Internet with them on and on, see what they're up to. Like I said, talk with other parents about it and what are they doing to keep their kids safe. Connect with the schools and see, you know, what's going on for education in regards to cyberbullying and how they're managing it and in the classrooms or at school. You know, we know that technology is not going away, and forbidding young people to access electronic media may not be a good long-term solution. But
can it be a short-term solution if you find something particularly egregious that's going on? Can you say, okay, you know, you delete that Facebook account for a couple of weeks at least until you get your head screwed on straight?
I think it's very important that, yeah, you have that conversation with your child and to understand what does it mean to be cyberbullied. And if you have that open communication with your child, they will come to you and share this with you. If not, you, a counselor, and that counselor will talk with you and then talk about, well, what effect this has on you. And, you know, again, it's just that open communication that's important, and that you don't have to be tuned in to a particular Facebook and have to put up with the cyberbullying that may occur.
And cyberbullying can really exacerbate mental health problems that children may be having.
Correct.
And Al Nystrom, this is an important topic for you, the overall mental health of people in the community. Tell us how you got involved with this other event that we're talking about, Mike's Run, which is scheduled for June 21st. It's at Hackman Field in Marshfield. Tell us about that.
Sure. This is really a result of an incident with my friend Mike Hackman, who was a childhood friend way back to high school 35 years ago. And I saw Mike struggle with mental illness and anxiety disorders throughout his entire lifetime. And ultimately that claimed Mike's life in 2010 when he took his own after trying so many different treatments and cures. And so we along with the Hackman family, we decided to try to do something positive with what happened to Mike, try to make a difference in others' lives that are going through similar struggles. And out of that came the idea of Mike's Run, which was something Mike's brother Mark and I worked on and engaged the Marshfield Clinic to do a couple things. One, to raise money for the cause of mental health awareness and education, things that we're doing with Mike and others at the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And also really to spark some communication within the community and get people a little more comfortable with mental health.
We've got a 5-mile run and a 2-mile walk, so this is something that anybody can do easily. And what do people need to do to sign up? Again, we're talking about June 21st. Can you just show up at the event?
We welcome walk-ins. We always prefer registrations. It's a little bit easier that way for us in planning. Marshfield Clinic has a website, marshfieldclinic.org. And on there is a separate page for Mike's Run. And there you can register. We encourage a fundraising aspect of this. So if you do plan to participate as a walker or runner, there are opportunities to solicit pledges just like you would for the American Heart Walk, for example, or the cancer fundraisers. The whole idea is to raise money as well as awareness, and with that money we'll continue to try to do some good things in terms of reaching out to the community and educating.
You raised more than $40,000 last year for mental health services?
We did, and we've raised about $100,000 in our first 3 years on a combined basis. So we feel that's a meaningful amount of money and gives us some resources to do some things in Marshfield and surrounding areas that just haven't been done before.
What kinds of things does the money go for?
Sure. We did. We made an extensive investment in reference materials at Marshfield Library last year. They really saw a void in terms of what they can offer, CDs and books and so forth to help everyone understand mental illness better. We did have a major undertaking with the Marshfield Clinic last year, a community conference just like the one we're about to do in April, and the subject was warning signs of teenage suicide, and had a very strong attendance there to really help people be aware of some of the red flags that are out there and hopefully be proactive in helping those that need help before it's too late.
Why do we as a society need to hold events like this to raise money for mental health? Why is it so underfunded?
In my opinion, it's just a very difficult topic for people to understand. I didn't understand it.
Well, it's tough to talk about too.
Very difficult. I think it's much easier to talk about someone's courageous battle with cancer or heart disease than it is to talk about someone's battle with anxiety disorders or depression. And most of us don't understand depression. I'm by no means an expert. 35 years ago, I didn't understand it at all, and I didn't understand why Mike wasn't happy and why he couldn't just, get in a good mood like the rest of us. And over time, I came to realize that there are medical reasons for that. And so I think we're not comfortable talking about it. We don't understand it. And I think we need to do, we need to start to raise this as a medical issue and encourage people to seek medical treatment.
Well, let's talk about Mike Hackman. He's a Marshfield man. He committed suicide in 2010 after this long battle with mental illness. And you just told me you knew him as a childhood friend. What was he like as a child?
Yeah, Mike was, he's a great guy, obviously a true friend. A great sense of humor, very accomplished in life. Academically, he was tops in his class, valedictorian, very accomplished athletically, state champion cross-country runner. Everything Mike did, he did extremely well, and a very compassionate man, a very sincere man, and would do anything for anybody. So, we struck a quick friendship along with his brother Mark. The three of us were very tight in high school and beyond that, and remained very close friends right up until the end. But you look at Mike and guys like Mike and say, that guy's got the world by the tail. There's nothing he can't do. There's nothing that he won't be able to do in life. But what most people didn't see is the demons that he battled inside with the anxiety and depression disorders that really prevented Mike from having the life that he deserved to have.
As a friend of his, did you see those things?
Yeah, you saw the depression, pretty early in high school. It became much more pronounced later in life. The red flag started to show up. Mike moved away for a while. When he came back, he struggled to hold jobs in his adult life because of the paralysis that takes place when you go through those health issues. And those are red flags. And Mike did what a lot of folks do with depression and anxiety is they self-medicate with alcohol. And we saw a lot of that. And you knew that he wasn't, he just couldn't get, healthy any other way or didn't know how to. And so he tried hard. But you definitely could see that, throughout the course of Mike's life.
He came from a prominent family in Marshfield, correct?
Yeah. His dad is a community leader. They're well known in the community, very successful people, highly, highly respected. Jack Hackman, his dad, is certainly one of my role models and has been. And so Mike had, again, from the outside looking in, had everything you would need to have a healthy and successful life. But what he did have is, what people don't understand is he had health issues. And
the event is taking place at Hackman Field.
Correct, yeah.
And that's named after...
Right. Jack made a donation to build basically what exists as a beautiful baseball facility in Marshfield that was built probably 8 or 9 years ago. And baseball is very close to the Hackman family. We spent many days in Wrigley Field together watching Cubs games, and Jack is passionate about baseball. And so he made a major gift for the city of Marshfield to enjoy that for many generations. And we thought it very appropriate as we started to put together the idea of a run to start and finish at Hackman Field.
So here's a guy who came from a prominent family, a family of community leaders. He was a valedictorian, a great student, a great athlete, had everything going for him. And yet, inside, it must have been a world of pain.
It was terrible pain. And it prevented Mike from having the life he should have had. It prevented Mike from getting out of bed many days as an adult. It prevented Mike from having, job security and good job, for performance. And there were things that are, they're invisible. It's not like a medical condition. Some are clearly visible to the outside world. Mental health is not. It's all inside and it's real. And it says, it's,
And there's such a stigma about talking about it.
It's a good point, Glenn. I just want to reiterate what Al has to say, and that is, I think what we're trying to do in this education is wonderful, both the conference and just sitting here and talking with you two guys, is if we can uncover that stigma associated with mental health and just really help people understand that is real. There are people out there that still don't believe that mental illness is real and that medications can help, psychotherapy can help. And I think that's what we're trying to do. Governor Walker will be signing off on a law soon to allow the correspondence with my fellow colleagues, which, again, was kind of covering that stigma again that mm-hmm. we shouldn't be talking to each other because this is a secret and only mental health providers should know about it. So I'm glad that that's going to happen. What we're doing, this education is so important so that people feel it's common. I mean, how often do we talk about cancer? How long do we, and the treatment of it, and how many runs do we have for that? That's what's so wonderful about this is that there aren't a lot of runs. There's not a lot of fundraisers for mental illness. And I think this, we are one of very few in this state. And I think as this grows and the conference to educate people on mental health grows, we're going to see a lot more people seeking treatment because treatment is effective.
Shakespeare once wrote about people who live lives of quiet desperation. This is really what we're talking about here.
And Al had said this before, and I say this again, is that, I think what happened with Mike is he sought treatment and he had quality care. And here's an individual with quality care. And he just felt hopeless. It just wasn't getting better for him long term. And I think that's what it is that you just start to feel so hopeless about your future.
We're talking to Mike Field. He is someone who works with the Behavioral Science Division of the Marshfield Clinic. We do have a Behavioral Health Community Conference on Cyberbullying that takes place April 24th at the Laird Center. And we have both the conference and Mike's Run websites on our Route 51 Facebook page if you want more information. Also, Al Nystrom, who helped to organize Mike's Run, Named after his friend, Mike Hackman, who came from a prominent family in Marshfield, committed suicide in 2010 after a long battle with mental illness. When we come back, we're going to hear from Justin Patchen, professor of criminal justice at UW-Eau Claire and the keynote speaker of this April 24th conference at the Laird Center when Route 51 Regional Talk Radio continues.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from The Hostel Shop in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, committed to helping people rediscover the joy of cycling with recumbent trikes and a comfortable, efficient, and easy riding experience. More at HostelShop.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We're talking about cyberbullying, the use of the internet and social media to intimidate, harass, threaten, humiliate innocent victims. And if you'd like to join the conversation, maybe you know somebody who has been a victim of cyberbullying or the traditional old-fashioned form of bullying, which takes place all the time without our high-technology world, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Maybe you know somebody who's struggled with mental illness, with depression, with anxiety. Maybe somebody who's committed suicide. We're talking about an event called Mike's Run, which is coming up on June 21st at Hackman Field in Marshfield, and also a conference on cyberbullying and mental health taking place at the Marshfield Clinic in the Laird Center, April 24th. And Mike Field, what do people have to do in order to register for that?
Well, basically what I'd like to just reinforce is that this is a very low cost conference in that it's less than $100 for both days for psychologists, nurses, counselors, school counselors, that there's still slots available, and that the community conference is free so on Thursday night. So that's an important note here for you.
And the registration is 715-387-9081. And again, you can find out more about that conference and Mike's Run. We've got both websites on our Facebook page. I want to play right now a short clip from Justin Patchen. He's a professor of criminal justice at UW-Eau Claire and the co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. And the topic of his address is bullying beyond the schoolyard. I had a chance to talk to Justin this week. We've got a short interview segment with him, about 4 minutes long, as he responds to my question, what is cyberbullying, what's new about it, and what is old about it?
People have been mistreating each other for generations, not only teens and kids, but adults as well. Technology does put a new spin on it. There are certain challenges and opportunities associated when you bring technology into the mix. I mean, the potential for anonymity, the fact that I can set up a fake email address or fake Facebook page and do and say things towards you that maybe you don't know who it is that's saying these things. So it used to be, at the end of the day, if you were, had a bad day at school, you could head home and, you could be protected for a few hours. Nowadays, kids can be bullied around the clock. But also, at the same time, technology creates certain opportunities because, by definition, with cyberbullying, there's always evidence.
With some kids, this can just be devastating. It can even lead to suicide if a child has mental health problems to begin
Absolutely.
With.
Absolutely. And oftentimes, when a suicide is involved or an attempted suicide, bullying or cyberbullying is more accurately characterized as a trigger than it is a cause. It could be one of many factors going on in their lives, but it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
You're a professor of criminal justice. To what extent are politicians and law enforcement officials taking this seriously as a crime?
Well, that's interesting. We track very closely new legislation on bullying and cyberbullying, and when we first started studying these things, again, over 10 years ago, very few states had, even bullying laws, and hardly any. I don't think any back then had cyberbullying laws. Now, 49 states have bullying laws. Montana's the only one that doesn't. And the vast majority of those include some mention of electronic forms of bullying. So Wisconsin has a bullying law that was adopted in 2010. It does not explicitly include cyberbullying. It's been shall I say, politically popular to propose new legislation targeting these behaviors. A lot of times those provisions don't make it through, and the ones that do don't really do much, don't really change much, don't really offer schools or parents or communities any additional tools to help them respond.
How do you differentiate and walk that fine line between someone who's a victim of a hate crime mm-hmm. and the exercise of your First Amendment rights of free speech?
Well, that's a debate I get into quite regularly with folks. And what's more important is determining whether or not the speech or behavior, whether it happened at school or online, no matter what's being said, whether it results in a substantial disruption of the learning environment at school. So as a student, I might say something at school that's completely protected speech, but if I say it in a way that disrupts the learning environment or infringes on the rights of other students, that's a problem.
You've got a new book out, Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral. Explain that title to me.
Samir Hinduja and I have written 4 books on cyberbullying, and previously we've written for adults, for teachers, for parents, for law enforcement officers, counselors. So this one was really exciting. It just came out in December, and we wrote it for teens, for young people, and of course parents and teachers can get something out of it as well. But we wrote it sort of as a guidebook, as a toolbox for teens themselves who are being cyberbullied, who see cyberbullying happening, who may be considering cyberbullying somebody else. If maybe they're upset, maybe they're, we have a whole chapter on things they should consider if they're thinking about engaging in these behaviors. The first two-thirds of the book is all about what kids should do if they encounter cyberbullying in some way. But what's most exciting is the last couple of chapters really focus on empowering teens to do something about this problem, to delete the cyberbullying, but also make kindness go viral. And, we were exposed to a number of teens over the last few years who have taken the power of technology and used it to do very positive things, being nice to their classmates and supporting those who might be targeted and passing on compliments and things like that. So this is our attempt to talk directly to the teens and give them some solutions to these problems.
Justin Patchen, thanks so much for spending some time with us today, and good luck at that conference on April 24th. Hopefully there will be a lot of people there, and you'll be able to spread your message and make a difference.
Glad to talk with you, Glenn, anytime.
And that again is Justin Patchen. He is the keynote speaker at that conference that's taking place at the Laird Center in Marshfield on April 24th. Our guests on Route 51 today, Mike Field, who works at the Marshfield Clinic in their behavioral and psychiatry department, and Al Nystrom, who is one of the organizers of Mike's Run, an event coming up on June 21st to raise money for mental health services. Mike's Run, named after Al's childhood friend, Mike Hackstrom, who committed suicide in 2010 after a long battle with mental illness. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Mike Field and Al Nystrom, respond to what you just heard. Mike?
Well, I really liked Justin's comments. I thought they're spot on. One of the things that I think that we're struggling with in this country is when a youth dies of suicide, and there's possible cyberbullying going on, I think this happened in Florida, is that we're looking at this as a crime. And I don't think that is where we need to go. I think what we need to do and maybe consider is this is a public health issue. This is an issue that has an effect on mental health, on growth of a child. And I think that we need to keep that in mind, is that can we censor everybody and what they say? He talked about the First Amendment. And I think that's a fine line between what is said and the cause mm-hmm. and effect relationship. So I think that we really have to take a look at that. Is this, and the media kind of portrays it, is this a crime or is this a public health issue that's coming about because of the electronic explosion?
Al, what do you think of the book that he's written, Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying, and Make Kindness Go Viral, and the fact that it's aimed at kids?
Well, I think it's just a huge, timely topic. And you know, my perspective on bullying is it's nothing new. I saw it 40 years ago in grade school. For a little while, I was a victim of it. I was a smaller guy, a shy guy, easy target. And but back then, it was just, you know, you dealt with it with a couple of people, and you were done. You didn't have this getting broadcast all over the school system. That would have been a lot different. So you look back at that that experience that we all had, and you recognize it in yourself or in others that were around you, and you understand how much more dangerous it is now. And a good friend of mine, Dr. Jim Mazza, was a presenter at the suicide conference last year, mm-hmm. and Jim was a good friend of Mike's as well. And you know, just the understanding of you know, how that could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's just, I mean, lives are at risk if we don't deal with this.
Do you think if we had more awareness of this subject and we were more willing to talk about it, do you think that might have made a difference in your friend Mike Hackman's life?
You know, I think Mike, honestly, I think Mike did everything he could do, and I think he had, you know, he had access to medical care and to treatment and counselors and professionals that, frankly, not everyone would have had, and it still... Mike seemed to be, you know, on a collision course for, you know, what lied ahead of him you know, in spite of all of that. So I think in Mike's case, it was really just a matter of, a very, you know, very powerful illness. And in the end, as Mike said, he ran out of hope. And when that happened, he had to make that, you know, he made that decision. But I think it's, you know, it would have probably helped his, you know, the people surrounding Mike to understand, you know, kind of the root causes better. And
if it wouldn't have helped him, at least it would have helped his friends, and maybe he would have gotten help that way.
Yeah, clearly. You know, the more, you can never have too much support in terms of friends and family and everything. And I think we've all learned a lot in Mike's journey that we want to share.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's go to Dennis in Coloma. Dennis, you're on Route 51 with Mike Field and Al Nystrom.
Hello. I just wanted to comment on the depression. I have had two brothers who committed suicide. I've gone through bouts of depression. Was very fortunate I did find a counselor and some medication that worked for me. But as you're going through this, you had mentioned about self-medicating. When you do that with alcohol or drugs, it's very temporary. After the fact, you actually feel more worthless because you don't have the self-control that other people have, which leads to another bout of it. And in the midst of the depression, there is actual physical pain that you feel. It's just very debilitating.
Mike Field?
I tell you, you really struck a nice chord here as far as how I can respond. When people come in and they have problems and they've been self-medicated, I approach it as saying, you know what, you did the right thing. This is the start of something new by coming in, seeking treatment. I always tell them, you know, there's a functional approach to feeling better and there's a dysfunctional approach. And oftentimes drugs and alcohol lead to that dysfunction, whether it's a DUI or some type of criminal behavior that can occur from it. What I tell people is I give them hope. I say, listen, this is what we're going to be doing, and the journey that we're going to go on is going to get you better. And if you stick with me, we will get better. If they need, you know, if someone needs that happens to have a substance use issue, I will certainly get the treatment. But we won't stop there. We'll also treat that depression, that anxiety that exists, and the reason why perhaps somebody is self-medicated. And we're just incredibly successful with the majority of the people that come in to change their life and see have a different outlook in life. And, you know, it sounds like you're one of those success stories.
Al Nystrom, your friend Mike Hackman, self-medicated.
He did. I think Dennis described Mike's experience very well. It was a short-term fix, but it's all Mike could think of at the time to take away the pain or at least make it disappear on a temporary basis. And there are a lot of risk factors that come with that, you know, that's what Mike, he didn't know what else to do. He had tried everything else, and, you know, you can say stop drinking and everything. It's easy for us to do that, but we're not the one feeling the pain, and if they're going to stop, you know, self-medicating, then they have to have an alternative to make them feel better, and, you know, when they don't, they tend to, you know, Mike went back to that, to his own treatment.
Dennis, you had two brothers who committed suicide?
Yes, about 10 years apart. There's depression in the family history. So the first one, I had no clue as to what was going on with them, what depression was. The second brother who did, I had talked to him the night before he committed suicide. He thought, you know, he hit it very well. I thought he was going to be okay. We had talked for hours. And
what you're describing, what you're really, Dennis, what you're describing is kind of a generational issue. We're, you know, as we remove the stigma from mental health issues and identify that there is successful treatment, more and more people are coming in and seeking treatment. So if we can remove the stigma and educate people that we can be successful with interventions, both psychotherapy and medication, more and more people will come in. And I think what often happens in some of the older generation is that, you know, the old pull your pants up and get going is we're throwing that out the window and we're saying, you know, come in and seek treatment from professionals and we will help and guide you to a better mental health.
And Dennis, you're battling with depression yourself. How are you doing?
I am doing well now. And that's the one thing I guess I would like to leave with is that, you know, get the help. If the counselor doesn't seem to be working for you, go to another one. I went through three of them before, and a lot of medications before I found the right one that worked, and there is hope.
Dennis, thanks so much for the phone call. We really appreciate you calling up and sharing your story with us today.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, take care. Mike Field, there is hope if you seek it.
Definitely. I think it's one of the more fulfilling areas in my practice is that I do see people come in despair, and I do see individuals that have had difficulties in their life as a result of mental illness. And as they seek treatment and the treatment's effective, I see life's change. It's a wonderful feeling, and it's what keeps me coming back every day to help people and to guide people to better mental health.
And Al Nystrom, there is hope if you seek it.
We believe that. In fact, when you attend the walk and run, you'll see little bracelets we hand out that has HOP in it. HOPE stands for Hold On, Pain Ends. And so it is a message of hope, and it's the foundation for why we think this is worthwhile.
Al Nystrom, he is one of the coordinators of Mike's Run, named after Mike Hackman, a childhood friend who committed suicide after a long battle with mental illness. That's June 21st in Marshfield. And Mike Field, who is an advanced practice nurse with the Marshfield Clinic Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Department. He's here to talk about a behavioral health community conference on the subject that takes place on April 24th at the Laird Center. You can find information on both of those events on our Route 51 Facebook page. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Our guest today, Mike Field, an advanced practice nurse with the Marshfield Clinic Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Department, and Al Nystrom, a childhood friend of Mike Hackman, who committed suicide after a long battle with mental illness, and one of the organizers of Mike's Run, which is committed to raising money for mental health services in the Marshfield area. That event on June 21st and the behavioral conference coming up on April 24th. Now, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. At the start of the show, I played a song written by Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary called Don't Laugh at Me, which has become something of an anthem against bullying. Last May, just about a year ago, Peter Yarrow was a guest on this program with former Congressman Dave Obie, who is also, you may be surprised to know, an accomplished harmonica player. Now, the two of them talked about Peter Yarrow's campaign against bullying, and while they were doing that on the air, I brought up the song underneath their conversation, and in an impromptu bit of live radio magic, they actually began playing and singing along with it. Dave Obie on harmonica, Yarrow on guitar and vocals, while the Peter, Paul, and Mary song played in the background. I want to play that segment for you here because it's so powerful. And if you listen closely, you'll hear Peter Yarrow say E flat. What he's doing is telling Congressman Obie which harmonica to pick up and play along with the song. Yarrow begins by talking about how our culture and mass media encourages bullying behavior.
Mm-hmm. Now listen to not your talk show, but listen to the talk shows where that's funny to ridicule and demean and speak cruelly of other human beings. We live in a very, very difficult time where the heart of America has been attacked by a terrible illness. And what I am working on, and I just did a Bill Moyers interview on Tuesday with Francine and her husband David Wheeler. Francine delivered the presidential address the time before last. She lost her son, and she's a great singer. She's part of the Newtown Flagpole Cafe, which is an ensemble that does a weekly radio show, and I had sung with her. And we must understand that, and you'll see this, just as we're talking about it now, we must make sure that those children that are in the schools do not reiterate the cruelty that we see in general society now. And if we start them early enough, we can succeed. And music can be a big help to doing that.
Don't laugh at me. Don't call me names. Don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, they're all the same. Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me. Beggar on the corner, you pass me on the street, and I wouldn't be out here begging if I had enough to eat. And don't think I don't notice
that our eyes never meet.
Well, don't laugh at me,
don't call me names,
don't get
your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes,
we're all the same.
Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me.
I'm fat, I'm thin, I'm short, I'm tall,
I'm deaf, I'm blind. Hey, aren't we all?
Don't laugh at me,
don't call me names,
don't get your pleasure from my pain.
In God's eyes,
in God's eyes,
we're all the same.
Someday we'll all have
perfect wings.
Don't laugh at me,
don't laugh.
That's Peter Yarrow of Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary doing his song, Don't Laugh at Me, with Congressman Dave Obey playing the harmonica. A year ago that happened, an impromptu piece of radio magic, as I described it, right here on Route 51. Mike Field and Al Nystrom, does our culture and our mass media encourage bullying in some respects? Mike, I'll let you go first.
Boy, I don't know if it encourages it. I think it covers it. I think they cover what is news. And one of the things that I'm going to throw a little wrench in here, and that is that it is such a pandemic, is that it doesn't happen just to a minority of adolescents, a small segment of our population. This also affects all adolescents. A recent paper published in April's American Sociological Review indicates that the research suggests that students become more popular and climb the social hierarchy in middle and high school, they are at increased risk of gossip, harassment, and even physical attacks by rivals competing for status. So you can see is that we're not just seeing a small minority of adolescents that are affected by this, but we're also seeing those that are trying to climb the popularity. And that's through cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Cyberbullying.
Yeah.
It's happening. And you'll see that as someone starts to become more popular, somebody needs to attack them so that they can start climbing.
Well, you know, it's like a pecking order, isn't it? And mm-hmm. we're taught from an early age to compete, to get ahead, to win at all costs, that there's nothing more important than making money and being more successful than the people around you. Now, doesn't that vital part of American life and culture encourage bullying in some people?
I think it starts at home, though. I think that parents need to be, you know, you need to be so much in touch to what's going on and the behavior of their children and attending conferences to find out what's going on in schools and how their kids are interacting with other kids. And I think you need to be having the frank conversations with your kids about what is, you had mentioned before, this outreach of positive behavior, and that we should be encouraging that. We should be expecting that. And we should be talking about competition, what it means. Competition means helping the guy up when he's down. And, you know, you're only as good as your weakest link. And that doesn't matter whether you belong to a school, whether you belong, you know, in an athletic event, whether it's a play that you're putting on in school, or if it's a neighbor next door, is that, you know, we are here to help each other. And I think if that competition is a reason for us acting in a negative way, we need to address that.
Al Nystrom, you're a successful guy. You're the president of a bank in Marshfield. But yet... being successful isn't everything.
Well, it's not, and we all know people that have achieved things in life, but you know, appear to be, you know, happy on the outside, but not so much on the inside. So appearances can be deceiving. I think they were deceiving in Mike's life. You know, you look at, as we talked earlier, about all the things that he had going for him, but inner peace isn't always there and accessible. And you know, hopefully the work that we're doing with Marshfield Clinic will help folks find that peace and head off problems before they become irreversible.
How important, Mike Field, is a stable family structure in all of this, a safe place for kids who, if, you know, say they're being bullied on the internet and social media, oftentimes they won't have any safe places because that media follows them around everywhere they go, at home, in the bedroom, even on their personal computer. How important is it for a family to provide children with a place where they feel safe?
I think it's very important, although there is the reality of that we do live in broken families. And to quote Hillary Clinton, it takes a community. And I think it's what's really important here is that all of us intervene, whether you're a counselor, whether you're a teacher, whether you see bullying going on. It's not just somebody else's responsibility to intervene. Evidence suggests again that the most effective way of stopping bullying, and cyberbullying is that included, is that each other's peers. Is that if we can instill in our children leadership to address someone's bad behavior, that is probably the most effective way of how kids treat each other, because we're not there 24/7. We can't oversee all of it.
But the important thing is maintaining that link of communication with your kids.
You got it. You know, whatever it takes, make sure you keep that communication open, you will have a more effective way of handling these situations. Whether your child is the bully or whether your child is the victim of a bully, it still takes you with strong expectations in the communication and whatnot.
Mike and Al, thanks so much for being with us today.
I'm that kid on every playground who's always chosen last. A single teenage mother trying to overcome my past. You don't have to be my friend, but is it too much to ask? Don't laugh at.
We want to thank today's guests, Mike Field of the Marshfield Clinic Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Department, Al Nystrom, organizer of Mike's Run, and Justin Patchen, a professor of criminal justice at UW-Eau Claire, the co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center and author of Words Wound, delete cyberbullying, and make kindness go viral. A reminder, the Behavioral Health Community Conference on Cyberbullying takes place April 24th at the Marshfield Clinic Laird Center, 1000 North Oak Avenue. You can register before April 10th at 715-387-9081. Mike's Run takes place June 21st at Hackman Field in Marshfield. You can find out more information on both of those events on our Route 51 Facebook page or on marshfieldclinic.org. I'm Glenn Mobrig of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Peter Yarrow, Peter Paul and Mary, and Dave Obey. Next week, Route 51 focuses on long-term unemployment and North Central Wisconsin's troubled paper industry. Remember to follow us on Facebook. You can hear this again in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.